This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
We are honored to have Stuart Huff in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio with us. Welcome.
Hi, and I'm honored to be here.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Tonight, I've been looking forward to it.
Oh, good. Tonight, two shows at the York Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
You were here, it was in the fall.
I believe so.
Yeah.
I remember being chilly.
Yes.
Yeah, I believe it was in the fall.
I know of a routine you... It's on your CD, and you've done it before, where you have gone, and this is it's got to be a true story. You go into a gas station, one of those gas station sort of restaurants, the potato logs. We've all been there if you've grown up in the South.
Right.
And there's a sword in the counter
yeah.
for sale.
Love it. Absolutely love it.
True story. Right?
We're arguing whether you can buy a gun with a background check, but you can get a sword anytime you...
So, like a samurai sword?
Samurai sword, the throwing stars. Fantastic. And the first time I was in the gas station, and that happened in Kentucky, and I looked at the guy and I was like, have you ever sold any swords? And he just, what? No, totally didn't. I said, have you ever had to restock the swords? Like, have you ran out? Why would I even need to own a sword? I mean, why? He looked at me and he goes, when you need it, you'll know it.
Well, that makes me think of Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So where she has the sword.
If you end up in the,
if you're going out for a
zombie apocalypse, or you're in a gas station and you're in a car wash and a pirate ship pulls up, these are the only reasons you would really need to own a sword.
And it's in a place where it's usually an impulse buy, I would think.
Yeah. Give me some chiclets and some bugles, and the sword would be nice. I mean, what?
And if I mentioned that. Because I grew up in Arkansas, I have relatives in Kentucky, so I've made drives like that. If you've grown up here, you've gone to a gas station that was like that.
Right.
And so you get it. The minute you say it,
yeah.
and on your CD, you're in front of a Lexington crowd, I think.
Uh-huh.
So you hear those laughter of, oh, yeah.
Recognition.
Recognition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you're in an audience that maybe people haven't, it's still funny, but do you think about that when you're in front of a crowd?
I do, but like, for instance, North Dakota... have no idea what I'm talking about. Sword in a gas station? What? And I'll have people come up to me after the show and go, what kind of sword? I mean, is it real? Is it metal? Is it big? Is it a plastic sword? I bought my child a lightsaber. I don't, you know. Arkansas gets the sword bit.
Yes.
Yeah. All over the sword bit here in Arkansas. I do think about where I'm at and how it is. But I might still do the bit, but I'm going to do it in a different way.
Tweak it.
Yeah, it's going to be delivered in a let me tell you about something instead of look at what we're doing kind of situation. Right. But nowadays I don't have that many bits like that. Because I stopped, I was really an observational comic, I think, at one point, and now it's social commentary.
But still, you know, in a storytelling way.
Yeah, I tried. I like that style.
Personal anecdote.
Yeah, sort of, like that. Because it takes away, I don't like to be aggressive towards the crowd. I do not think I'm any smarter or dumber than anybody else there until you stand up and throw something at me, and then I'm pretty sure, you know, I have a leg up. But I don't like to make fun of people. I don't like to attack the crowd. So I don't like this aggressive kind of you're wrong, I'm right kind of comedy.
Well, you mentioned that, and I was listening back. You spoke with Kyle, as we mentioned, in the fall, and I was listening back to that conversation, and you mentioned that you don't make fun of other people, that you kind of stand up for the underdog. But I know a lot of comics will make fun of themselves. They'll use themselves kind of as a target. Do you ever do that?
Occasionally. Probably my number one goal in comedy is no ego. I want to remove the ego. It's such an arrogant thing to do, comedy. I'm elevated, amplified, and illuminated. Who am I? You know, I want to remove the ego. And so I don't talk a lot about myself, but I will use myself as an example. If I am making fun of someone, I'll try to turn around and say, and you know, here's what I've done that's just as equally as dumb.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. But I don't really, I try to eliminate myself. I try not to say I, but I am a real champion for the underdog.
You also love imagination and ambition, whether it's a school kid who thinks he might want a penguin for his very own, or someone 100-plus years ago trying to learn to fly. You love these people who dream. That's
oh,
who you
yeah.
love.
Oh, I love it. I understand that. It makes sense to me. You know, I understand that we have to get up and we have to go to work and we have bills to pay and stuff. But, oh, if you're looking for the world's largest squirrel, I am behind you 100%. If you're going to retire so you can make things out of pine cones, yes, Yes, okay. Yes, yes. That's the reason we're on Earth to me, is to let our brains just invent these amazing things. Flying through the air? Oh, us trying to fly was a lot better than actually flying. A lot better.
Well, so then do you have a dream, or are you already living that dream?
Yeah, I think I'm living that dream. I have two things. I want to be a good comedian. That's really a huge dream of mine. And I'm the only judge of good. I want to be a good comedian, and I want to collect the most weird junk. That's what I do. That's my life. I do shows at night. When I leave here with you guys today, I'm going to be hunting junk around Fayetteville. I'm going to be looking for the strangest things I can find. I have a Cookie Monster alarm clock. I just bought a wooden mermaid. She's about 4 feet tall. Gorgeous. Her hands are reaching out like she's trying to hug you. I just love, you know.
Now be careful, because you may have just sent many people to the garage and say, I'm going to go here, and then I'm going to the York Bowl.
You may, yeah.
Right. Bring
your
stuff.
Ticket, but I'm getting rid of this.
What can I bring with me tonight?
Finally, do you talk to strangers?
Yes. Yes. And I like it. I like it when someone comes up to me and says something that offends me. I like that. I want to hear what's going on. I want to hear what's in people's minds. And I'll ask questions. You say something to me that I don't like, that I find offensive, I'll say, why do you think that? Tell me why. You know, whatever it is. You're going to come here, speak English. People say that about Hispanics. Well, you know, why? You ever been to Louisiana? They don't speak English. They're born and raised in America. I like to find out what's going on in our country and try to figure out, do I agree with this? What is the truth?
You tell a great story about this guy who was at a bar at one of your shows, and he disliked the West and the North. And slowly, mm-hmm. as you're asking him questions, you find out that he only likes kind of him. He eliminates the people down the street.
Right, right. That actually, I wrote that based on a real thing. I was in this crowd in South Carolina. They hated me. I mean, hated me. And I get off stage, and a guy at a bar just said, and the bartender was Hispanic. And I said to the guy, hey, the bartender, I said, my name's Stuart. Can I get a drink? He said, sure. And he went to get it. And the redneck sitting at the bar goes, I hate Mexicans. You know, it's like, what a statement, you know? He didn't even like introduce himself. And I said, okay, you hate all Mexicans or just the bartender? Because maybe the bartender is now married to his ex-wife. Who knows?
Right.
He said, I hate them all. So that kind of statement is just ridiculous to me, the hatred involved in that. So now I'm asking him questions. I'm drawing out, where is this based in? What is this? And I get him all the way down to himself. He hates everybody. You love yourself. Yeah, I mean, so usually if someone makes a ridiculous, offensive statement, you can poke holes in it because hatred doesn't hold water. And I love doing that to people, and I get beat up. But, you know, it happens.
Oh, I got to ask one technical question, because you were here in the fall. Do you take notes of what you did in your shows here and then think about doing something different, or can you catalog like that?
You mean, no, I don't do that. What I do is I'm constantly writing. I have scripts of little pieces of paper, little napkins. I have notebooks, and, they're in the hotel room. I was looking at them when I came in last night. But it's kind of like I don't look back that far. It's kind of like an ongoing journey. And then when a notebook gets filled up, I put it in a box. So I have boxes of stuff. So I'll probably do some stuff that I did last year.
There'll be some new stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of stuff.
Stuart Huff, tonight at 8 and 10:30 at the York Bowl, between now and then, collecting junk around Fayetteville in Northwest Arkansas.
Yes.
Thanks so much for coming in.
It was an absolute pleasure.
This week, the Senate voted to consider gun control legislation. One story, the Sandy Hook shootings, made that happen. But now, the stories keep coming.
Different now is that you're getting reporting and a much broader level of anecdotes, of the kind of anecdotes that are actually so mundane that they don't normally make the paper.
What anecdotes accomplish that data can't, on the next On the Media.
On the Media, Sunday morning at 11 on KUAF 91.3 FM.